We'll call this meeting to order. It is 6 o'clock. It is the public safety meeting. The City of Yorkville on October 9th, 2017. Myself, Alderman Tarulis, Alderman Funkhauser, and Alderman Plocher are here, so we have a quorum. Are there any citizen comments? Do you guys want to make any comments or statements or talk about anything that's on the agenda?
No, it's all new for me, so
okay.
Not yet.
All right.
Maybe after.
No problem. So we'll start with new business, PS 2017-16, adjudication reports for September 2017. Or we can actually approve minutes from September 7th, 2017. Are there any amendments to the meetings from September 7th, 2017?
Nope.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The minutes are approved. So now we'll do new business, public safety 2017-16. Adjudication reports for September 2017. Any questions or inquiries or input on that?
Nothing in there that jumps out.
Nope.
It's very typical.
Nice. Some significant fines to some repeat offenders I see on the
yes.
list. But, all right. So let's discuss Public Safety 2017-17, the new liquor license category for a sidewalk or parklet cafe.
Hey, staff was approached by a couple of business owners in the downtown about having some type of outdoor seating or eating area in front of their establishment. So we decided to look into this further, and we realized that with a limited space of sidewalk area, we would offer not only public sidewalk for outdoor eating, but also areas within the park, the parkway where cars are, the right of way. Since we do have a liquor license right now for outdoor, like patio, that's all on the private side, we need to create another category for the public side. So this ordinance is going to allow for eating establishments to offer liquor during their hours of operation. And it's going to create a new liquor classification under the Outdoor Cafe, and it'll be called the Outdoor Cafe License, the OCL, and it will have some restrictions in regards to, you know, glass within that service area, so that you don't have to worry about any incidents of breakage within the public right-of-way. It'll restrict the entertainment as far as amplification of music. It will require specific locations for entrance and exit points, as well as provide a fee of $250, and that's an annual fee, and it's renewable. These licenses will coincide with the availability of the parklets, which will be from April 1st through October 31st of every year. And this fee is in addition, the $250 fee is in addition to any building permit fees that they would be required to have. This matter did go before EDC at their October 3rd meeting, and it's scheduled as a public hearing for Planning and Zoning Commission on the 18th. The public hearing has been revised to October 18th. In your memo, it says October 11th, and that's for the text amendment and the zoning portion of it. So if you have any questions about the parklet or cafe operation, I can answer those. Or if you have any specific questions about the liquor license amendment, I can answer those as well.
Anybody have a question? I have two, but I'll defer until...
Most of my questions we discussed in EDC, they relate to the actual operations of it, that side of it. So, but this one, I don't... have an issue creating the special classification for this one. I think it's good to separate it. My initial thought was, okay, why wouldn't we just pair it with the outdoor patio? And as I got to thinking about it, this does make sense to separate them, delineate. One question I have is and I know this is the same our other outdoor patio, the glass bottles or glass outdoor, whether it's plates or glasses, beer bottles. You know, just happened to be in Chicago for the IML just recently. I went to dinner, and we actually sat on a sidewalk cafe and had dinner with a small group. It was very nice. No incidents, literally cars coming right up to us as I'm sitting at the end of the table, and they park right in, nose in right to you. No big deal. But I had no issue with the glass containers there, and this is not even an enclosed area. as I was sitting there, I had a beverage and I'm thinking, what if this wasn't a plastic container? Wouldn't quite have the same effect. You know, my food comes out on a glass plate. I'm thinking, okay, it's going to come out on a tray or it's going to come out on plastics or something different. You know, is it really that big of an issue? I understand in some bars where it's a little more rough environment, I might have that issue. I'm not so sure that that's an issue here. The other side of it is also, I'm thinking if my plastic cup is empty, windy day, it's gone. Now they've got to do some more cleanup.
Now you need another drink.
Exactly. So I'm just thinking, I don't really have that big of a concern about having the glass restriction.
I agree. I would support removal of it. And that was something that had been put in place when the patio liquor license had been approved years ago. So we weren't planning on modifying it, but I would actually support that. I don't know that it's
important. I don't think my wife wants to have red wine out of a plastic cup.
All right.
Exactly.
You might have
to get city sales. That's right. No, I agree. I mean, to me, that's not an issue. That's not the hill to die on. I mean, if...
That's the only thing that I was kind
somebody
of...
Obviously, if they break something, the establishment is responsible for clearing the...
Absolutely.
The right-of-way in the public area, of course, but...
I don't see an issue with... this ordinance as it is, this is related to the licensing. How does this $250 compare to other municipalities that might have this type of specific licensing?
I don't know if we did a survey of others because it's a little, we're a little ahead of our time, I think, on the concept.
In the area. The city attorney who did prepare this has prepared them for other communities, and a lot of these recommendations came from that previous knowledge.
So I was just looking at it for our next item with all of our licensing. Does that seem fair?
It does. I think there's a little bit higher service level on our part to go out and check these things because we are taking over a portion of the public right-of-way versus just allowing you to serve it outdoors on a private patio. So I think the patio license is $100, and we were planning on raising it to, was it $150?
This is
off the top of my head.
Correct.
And that's regardless of sidewalk or right-of-way. Or, I'm sorry, parking.
We didn't touch it. Okay. So it's whatever the existing one is.
Correct.
Yep.
I guess I just wanted to clarify that, A, this does not add more liquor licenses. It's somebody who has an existing liquor license who wishes to expand into the public way. And then, B, there was a provision in there that read that they can serve... during the hours in which they're serving food. I think it specifically referred to food. What about a place like the law office that has a tavern license but does not serve food? What if they were to apply, then they fall outside the window of serving food?
Yeah, we'd have to modify that.
You're
right.
D1.
Yeah, but they don't serve the food.
Right.
They can bring food from other establishments, but they do not serve food at that establishment. So then would they qualify for this license?
Technically.
And I would assume that's one of the establishments that probably wants it.
Does it default to the legal hours for their operation hours?
Right.
Or their other license?
Yeah, but I know that the concern that was discussed briefly in EDC was, do you want them to be able to go outdoors in the parklet or the sidewalk at 1 a.m.
Right.
Our liquor license is on a Friday night or 1 or 2 a.m.
Why don't we? I mean, we can add a provision that says if you don't serve food, you're restricted to the hours of
B1, 2. You know, those have. No, that's, I'm sorry, that's the entertainment. But didn't they? There were specific times when they could be a little later.
Yeah.
Entertainment.
But the holidays.
Entertainment related.
That's right.
That was for the entertainment.
So let's think about this in two ways. One would be, let's say Crusade puts a table out front and they're a restaurant, although they have a tavern license. You know, they're probably selling a lot of mixed drinks and beer in the evening. If they're open till 1 a.m., do you want them to serve alcohol outside until 1 a.m.? And is that different than the law office, which makes no pretense about food because they don't have any? They have a full tavern license as well, being able to have beers and cocktails out there at 1 a.m., and they are a live music venue.
Right.
Well, I guess
See, when I picture these outlets and these little parklets and all that, I picture people sitting down, maybe tables of two, people having a meal, people having a drink, that kind of thing. I don't want this to be an outdoor party at 1 in the morning.
I mean, I already know that if you go down in the later hours of places like the law office, it's very common for
someone to... they congregate outside anyway.
Congregate and take the bottle of beer or glass that they have, and they're outside having a cigarette and having
Joe knows nothing about that.
I've never been to that place twice.
So, you know, we already have some of this, and I understand your feeling of... the intent is not to have everybody go out there, congregate, and just have their cocktails and extend the party outside.
Can we just put it with the entertainment hours? Limit that to the license hours?
The entertainment is Friday and Saturday from noon to 10, and then Sundays it ends at 8 unless it's a holiday.
And it's a holiday the next day.
Right.
But then what about during the week? If Jesus, I mean, you know.
Well, I'd say Monday through Saturday or whatever. It could be
until
the 10th.
Yeah.
I think 10 o'clock is probably a reasonable time to close.
And outside, yeah.
An outside dining area.
What's your thoughts earlier?
I'm good with that.
Okay.
Change that one to alcoholic beverages shall only be served to or consumed by those outdoor patrons up till 10 p.m.
Well, I would say that we shut down the entire outdoor...
the whole thing.
Maybe I'm being a grumpy old man.
Oh.
I don't know.
I'd be okay with them being out there. But as long as at some point they shut down the serving outside.
Right, but don't go inside, grab a beer, and go back outside. Right?
Yeah, how do you regulate?
Right, you can't regulate. Right.
Well, I mean, we can write them a ticket if the officers are down there for disturbance or anything.
We're already checking on that because we do get frequent complaints about people outside having a smoke break with the alcohol outside. And,
right.
You know, so that'd be no different than what we're doing already.
Right.
Or maybe cut it off at 11. And just cut it off at 11. The outdoor seating area.
Outdoor venue closes.
The outdoor venue has to be shut down at 11. Everybody can go back inside.
Yeah, I'm okay.
Kind of a nice compromise.
Yeah, I'm with that.
It's not 10, it's not 1.
Okay, so.
You're awfully quiet over there, Seaver.
Well, he's going to be the first one down there.
What?
I'm listening.
So this is only for Class F. So Class G is the patio licenses, which are on private property, can be hundreds of feet away from residences. We're talking about Class F, shutting it down at 11 p.m. for eating or drinking, whether you have a tavern license or a bar and grill. Or
on the public right of ways. Yeah, the private patios, they can stay up
right,
later.
Anywhere in the public way, sidewalk, course, parkway, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
Everything shuts down at 11.
And then... enforcement of smoking within the 15-foot area of the door or the parklet area, the patio area.
See, I think it's an extension of the restaurant. And
yes.
We do not have smoking in the restaurants. We do not have smoking in our...
Whatever is considered
the confined parameters of this...
is 15 foot outside of that.
Of that.
It's the same way it is in the outdoor patios, too.
So they can't go on the other side of the little fence that's 3 feet tall.
Right.
Be puffing into these people sitting there eating their meal.
They can't, if it's a 5 foot sidewalk, they can't be on the sidewalk when the patio is right there in the parking
right.
Shoulder.
They
have
to
be
go
outside of it
for a cigarette. Right.
As long as that's the understanding and interpretation of it, absolutely.
Right. You guys on board with that?
Yeah, fine.
It just disturbs me that I can't get a whiff of whatever.
A Marlboro? A non-filtered Marlboro?
Take a step over.
It's been 11 years, but I still crave. My wife gets mad at me because I search out people that are smoking.
You're stealing the secondhand smoke.
I have a cigar on my deck once in a while. We can swing by and just sit there and smile.
Just breathe.
Okay, so we've got two changes so far. One, we're allowing glass bottles on patios and parklet sidewalks, like class F and G.
And plates, you know.
Yeah. We're going to remove that restriction.
And then no outdoor eating or drinking alcohol in class F, which is only parklets and sidewalks, past 11 p.m., 7 days a week.
I don't think it's just outdoor. I think it's clear that it closes at 11. I mean,
the parklet.
The parklet and the outside cafe is closed at 11. Now, they can stay open later inside their businesses and keep going, but that closes down. So that means they have to, you know, tear it down or whatever. You know, some of them have to tear it down and all that after every use or.
Okay. Yeah, we can make those changes. If there's no other changes,
I'm good with the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we can take that to City Council with a track changes version if you'd like.
You mentioned the tear down. That's more on the TDC side of things. Some of them, I'm not sure we need to have them tore down if they are the heavy duty.
The heavy duty
grade.
Ones don't have to.
Yeah, that kind of
I just don't want a cheap launcher blown into 47 in the middle of a winter.
Right.
But it says cheap looking or cheaply made.
Yeah.
Who's to determine what's cheaply made?
Me.
When it comes to you know, you see these outdoor cafes most of the evenings, they just loop a chain through the whole thing and nothing's moving.
Yeah, I just don't want a launcher floating in the middle of 47.
Anything that's not permanently affixed has to be taken in.
Okay.
Yeah, they need to be heavy enough to where people don't want to try to move it.
All right.
Very
smart. Yes, sir.
The only other question I have is my wife will yell at me if I don't ask it. This doesn't affect a Panera bread, does it?
It.
I said it would. But
that's on private property.
Most of them are.
Yeah, that's
private.
What I said.
Yeah,
so
they're in a parking lot.
Okay, so she won't yell at me then.
That falls into the
I love how we're on this council to please our wives. I want to make sure she has a glass for her wine. You want to make sure she gets her Panera.
He's over here irritating his wife. He's been doing it longer.
So they get us out of the house and they get what they want. It's a perfect system. Perfect system.
This is government 101 over there, guys.
Right. If your wife ever asks you to run for public office, you know why. Right. Any other modifications or changes or... All right. Do you want to put it on public safety to discuss? I think it's big enough to where we should discuss it.
Okay.
But it's going to what? You October.
Yeah, it's going
to
come back.
Yeah.
So okay. After
City Council.
Right. Right. Okay. So let's put it on the regular agenda so everybody can talk about it. And we'll go from there.
Let's go to City Council.
On the 24th.
Yes.
All right. Public Safety 2017-18 Liquor License Application and Fee Review.
So staff reviewed several fees throughout the area because it hadn't been done in commission since 1986.
You see my face?
Yeah.
Frumpy old man's about to come out.
Yeah, so in reviewing comparable communities, nearby communities, we found that we were lagging behind in liquor license fees and also application fees for liquor licenses. So rather than taking a big jump right away per each liquor license category, staff is recommending a $200 per license fee for Class A1, R1, B, B1, BG, CA, and MB. And then additionally, we're recommending a $150 increase for our liquor license application fee to a total of $250 for a liquor license applicant. The hope with that larger increase is also to see if people would apply on time in a more timely manner than we've gotten in years past.
The biggest issue out of all of this from a process standpoint has been the late fee. We have a mad rush at the end of the fiscal year to renew, and we have a number of people who will not renew until the last minute, and then we'll expect the license to be turned around in a matter of 10 or 15 minutes, which becomes a little burdensome. So the rest of the fee increases we talked about last in the budget memo from last year. There was a comment in there about raising the fees by an incremental amount because they haven't been touched in a while, partially for revenue generation, but also to offset just our cost of processing the liquor licenses. And I know that in the past, sometimes that justification has not been well received. And so, if nothing else, we do think that the application fee increase and the late fee is justified from a deterrence perspective because it does cause us problems.
Well, yeah, when I read the memo, and the only justification was, well, the surrounding communities charge more, so we should charge more too. that doesn't fly. I mean, if the other communities want to charge more money to their businesses, that's fine. But unless there's some sort of empirical data that shows, yes, it's costing us more money to administer, it's costing us more money to issue these licenses, and we have a higher staff fee, and we have a higher inspection fees, I get that if it's costing us more money. But none of that was presented. Just said, well, the other communities are charging more, we should charge more too. Absolutely not. I absolutely get the late fee. Hammer them on the late fee, because administratively, they're a business, they need to get their stuff in promptly, and it's not our job to then jump and get everybody's licenses ready because they decided to apply late or last minute. So I have no problem with the late fee. The actual initial application fee, what was the justification for that, to raise just the application fee? Not all the renewals, the $200 bumps, but what was the justification for the...
The amount of time that it takes us to get through, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Background checks and things of that nature.
And follow-ups, okay. And same thing. People usually will wait until, you know, a couple days before they think they want to open, and then it's on us to turn it around on our end without even realizing that the state's process is now 2 to 3 weeks.
Correct.
So we usually will advise people of that, even though they're turning it in a couple days before they plan to open, and they still usually do not care.
I mean, so based on that, I would support a higher late fee and a higher application fee, but just to keep up with the Joneses and the surrounding communities because they charge more, I'm not supporting $200 bump for every license out there on an annual basis. So, you guys, who wants to go next?
I agree with you there, but I would say the cost of us processing it, I was still in high school, saying people got their pay.
I mean, but is there data to...
I mean, we still have... We increase our employees, so therefore we should increase the fee because it still takes the same amount of time. I wouldn't say... I don't know what we've...
But does it?
Yeah, but we have a lot more...
We're talking 1995 to 2017. Has the system gotten better and more advanced in that time?
We have more employees. We have more... I mean, our population was 5,000 people in 1995. I mean, we have more employees. We have a bigger staff.
So it's not necessarily
proportionate.
Yeah, if that's a necessary prerequisite to consider this, we can bring back justification. We didn't spend the time to do it because it was in the budget memo. We felt that the external comparables was enough of a reason. And if that's not enough, then, yeah, I don't think it'll be difficult to justify the amount of time that we spend on each license as it comes in.
I just want to make sure our fees are fair, reasonable, just like any other ones. If it's a water connection fee, you know, permit fees, I don't want to raise them, like Carla said, just to be raising them to keep up with the neighbors.
What?
It's nice when we can actually have fees that are lower than neighbors because we're more competitive in the market that way. But we do need to cover our costs to make sure that we're being efficient and effective. Regarding the application process, what does the process say for how... with the renewals, when do they have to be in before their expiration?
I don't have it in front of me, and I don't implement it, so I don't remember off the top of my head.
I mean, it's due on the day that it expires. I mean,
I think it's like April 1st. If you turn it in before April 1st, it's the normal fee, and then if that after April 1st. Or similar, then it's an increased dollar amount.
And that's the fee that we have here that we're increasing.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. That's the late fee. Because that's the fee that I would say, instead of jacking the initial application fee, jack the late fee application. Because if they're not going to get it in within the allocated time, whether it's a month or 2 months in advance, if they can't do that, yes, they should be hit with the higher fee.
Let me see if I can pull it up here.
I see his statement, though, about, you know, because the initial application has the background checks and all that. People come in and say, hey, I want to open this Saturday. Here's my application.
But that's where I want to also get to, is there something in there that says, if you're going to open on X, you need to be in this much in advance of that?
Yeah, so there's...
15 days prior.
For the initial opening or for renewal?
For the renewal.
And do you think 15 days is sufficient? Can we do it in 15 days without...
The 15 days is fine. Once you cross that threshold and you're into the April 16th, April 17th, people will walk in on April 29th.
So why don't we charge the same application fee, but we charge a rush fee if it's less than 15 days, where you charge an additional fee... If they come in less than 15 days before they expect the license.
Right, because that's what I'm getting at is if they're going to just say, I'll pay that, pay the late fee and push you right down to the last minute. No, forget that. Let's charge them for it, because that's when it's a burden on our staff.
Okay.
And we do charge a $100 late fee currently.
Yeah, that I'd be okay bumping that to $250, and then if they come in after that, you know, it's an expedited fee.
Yeah, late fee, I don't care, because these are business people. They their livelihood depends on their liquor license.
Right.
And if they can't put in a calendar, renew liquor license in time for us to be, then that's on them.
Yeah,
so I don't care what you make the late
time.
Fee. But how about a rush fee for the app, for the initial application?
Yeah, that's fine. And to your question, there's two standards. I think we have to respond back on the liquor license within a number of days. And we tell people that, and they're generally okay with it. But then, I mean, we're always trying to make sure that we deliver things as quick as possible. So if somebody comes in and they really want to open on the weekend and it's Thursday, I mean, we will try to do whatever we can to help out the business. It's just we don't collect any extra money for that.
Do an expedited fee for that, too. If you want to come to us with, you know, within 1 week of your open, it's going to cost you an extra...
What, or less than 15 days?
Less than 15 days, it's going to cost you an extra $300. If you come in before that, anything before that,
keep the fee the same.
Take the standard fee. I mean...
Yeah.
That's what we have to do if we want anything done. You go to the post office, you need something overnighted, you're going to pay for it.
Yep.
It's a service.
Okay. We can bring back something at the next meeting, whatever that is, if that's okay.
Yep. Is that it for liquor license applications and fees?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that is just tabled to the next public safety meeting. Public safety 2017-19 KenCom intergovernmental agreement.
This is a twofold issue. The way this is working out with our new world reporting system that we share with Kendall County, Plano, Montgomery, and Oswego. Our dispatching system is under a different program, which is pretty much obsolete, so they've been searching for quite a while to get a new system, which New World also offers, which would bring together all of our reporting systems into our cars, into our car computers, and it makes sense. Part of the issue with this is that we don't have the final numbers right now. We have them, but they haven't been approved by the executive committee, so we couldn't bring that today, so we just have draft status. This is more informational. So part of the issue is that we are looking to purchase the new software, which probably be about $10,000 or $11,000 for our share of it, and then we're also changing the intergovernmental agreement with KenCom, with Kendall County, that KenCom has taken over the New World systems from Kendall County, which would make it cheaper for all of us as one to do it, and bring it all under one umbrella instead of KenCom running the reporting system, or Kendall County running the reporting system, and KenCom doing the computer-aided drafting system. It's bringing it all in together under KenCom. It's probably the best way to put it, Bart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the New World, the database system, we have an individual contract with the vendor for that.
With Kendall County.
With Kendall County.
Kendall County has the contract.
They have the contract for all of the members.
Correct.
That are involved.
Yeah,
we pay Kendall County our portion to share.
And we have an intergovernmental agreement with them currently in place that outlines that whole system and the cost sharing and all that.
So for the budget sense, we're shifting it from Kendall County to KenCom, regardless of what the cost is. It's not a new fee. We're just reallocating who we're paying basically for this contract.
We are adding some modules that are going to increase.
So there's
going to
be an increase on this one.
Sure.
That'll be the CAD, the computer aided dispatching modules, is what that'll be added onto.
Because we're coming in line with the new system and with the updated New World system.
And Kendall County's IT will currently maintain it like they do already. There'll be really no change, just KenCom's taking ownership versus Kendall County.
Okay. The one issue I have with this is just the length of the term. It's a 9-year term, and in technology, that's a very long time. When looking at the rough numbers here, it's not that we're going to pay a whole lot. I know we're paying $10,000 to $12,000, probably all said and done with everything, but it's a long term. Do you know the contract for the CAD system that they are moving into? Do you know what they're going to have on that?
I think it's the same. I think it's going to all tie in as one.
It's just a very long contract for technology, especially knowing what they went through and all the different changes they had to go through sitting on that board for a couple of years. Just a little apprehensive about that because I see what position they're in right now, the struggles they're in, because they were with the same system for so long and just kept adding on instead of doing the right thing and doing a new build on it. I'd hate to see that happen again, and then we come up with a massive hit of fees that everybody pays into again. So that's just my concern, is the length of time.
So in general, within municipal software programs, enterprise resource planning, etc., Tyler, which is New World, is the big player, and then the other one is Paris.
BSNA.
Yeah, BSNA. So so there's kind of a Microsoft-Apple scenario going on here. So I don't even know what software system they were using prior to this, but generally we've got two of the giants in the industry. So when we look at an ERP at some point in the next couple years, you know, it's either going to be Tyler or BSA, and I wouldn't have a problem at that point signing on to their system for a long term, just knowing that they're going to be refreshing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I just, knowing the position that they're in right now, it's just because they were in it for so long, you know, it's just kind of hop along a little bit, you know, get a little bit done. That's just my concern, is if you go into a 9-year contract, that's, I don't want them to be in the same position that they just got or getting out. And I sat in on two of the demos of these programs, so I, they're very impressive compared to what we have all around, so, but, yeah, just concerning.
Sure. I haven't looked at their licensing, too, but I know that the Tyler ones on the municipal side, they're similar to, like, an Office 365 license where you just get constant upgrades.
Right.
So it's not a matter of you're buying a version. It's like you basically subscribe to them for a number of years.
Update, which
We've been with New World for 10 years now?
Yep.
At least 10 years. I'd say maybe 9 at the earliest, but
well, since this is a intergovernmental agreement, do we even have an option for less than 9? Or is this kind of like, this is what everybody's doing, you're either in or you're out?
Well,
I mean, isn't that usually how it is with CanCom? Let's be honest. I mean, it's...
Well, and you'd have to convince all the other entities to agree with you.
And remarkably on this, everybody's agreeing with it, so it's not that that's a justification by any means, but usually with CanCom, if there's any dissent, it's usually splits pretty quick, and everybody's pretty much on board with this.
Yeah, didn't we go down a road with, like, we're going to do our own dispatching with Oswego or something, like, years ago?
There was some research done, you know, when we were looking at options, and there was the big issues a few years ago, and I think we're getting through it.
Well, I'm just saying the reason we, like, stopped is because the numbers were astronomically high, weren't they?
Yes.
Wasn't viable.
Yeah, it was not viable. Right. You know, even Montgomery, that was running their own dispatch center, has now folded it and joined CanCom. I think with some of the new state laws where they're mandating the PSAPs, the public safety points, that the dispatch points that they have to start consolidating services is changing. And I know there's other players that are asking to come into CanCom, which is...
Yeah, those have been very long discussions to date because other entities want to try to pull them one way or another. And so that's been ongoing for a while. The current contract we have with CanCom, do we know what the split is? Is it the same, kind of county 55%, and then basically taking the bulk of it to them as split?
Are you talking about the dispatching costs or the renewal costs?
No, the renewal on here for maintenance. Because here it's, Montgomery has a set fee, which makes sense because they have a separate contract altogether. Then CanCom takes 55% of the balance, and we're taking 15% for each of the individuals. I can only assume that Oswego has a higher demand for the software, the usage, terminals, that kind of thing, as compared to us and even Plano, very few terminals.
And those costs are coming out in the initial with the agency costs for the packages that you're purchasing.
Okay. Because what I'm thinking is 15% for Yorkville, Oswego, Plano.
For the basic software fee, that will be that way, but for the different components that they're picking and the number of components, they'll have a different fee each agency. You know, because not all the agencies are going with the same components.
Why would our maintenance not mirror what the software cost would be? Because if this is the total cost of this is 21% of your software cost. Your maintenance cost is 21%. So why would our maintenance cost not mirror that with our software purchase? If we're going to do something different than, say, Oswego or Plano or Kendall County, why would we not pay proportionally to what our software costs? I wish Joel was here because he's in on those board meetings.
Yeah, I think I would have to look into that a little further.
Okay. I just want to make sure that we're paying what we are, what we should pay. Because I get that, you know, we're not going to see the purchase contract for the different pieces because that's going to be dealt with through Kanban directly. But this one, I think we would pay proportionately.
Are you talking about the percentage breakdown?
Yeah, because in here it's 15%.
Correct, but you're still able to get all the data from all the other entities regardless. So that's why I think they split it up evenly.
Yeah, but I think what he's saying is if we pay 15%, shouldn't we pay a proportional percentage for the maintenance?
For the maintenance as well.
Yeah.
Am I right? Is that what
you're saying? Because if we're going to pay a greater or lesser charge, you know, Oswego's going to add on four different modules that cost them an extra... Who knows what? There was service contract is a percentage of the total purchase. Mm-hmm. I think it should mirror what we're going to be paying for that. That's all I'm getting. And actually, that may work to our detriment. Not really, I don't know. But we don't have those numbers in front of us. We don't know how much we're purchasing based on the modules, and we don't know the final cost here.
Now this is going to have to come back once we get the numbers plugged in.
If we could try to get some more information, like what the actual module costs are, what our individual breakdowns would be, does it make sense? Does it mirror? If it does, that's great. If not, it's a discussion we have to have at the same time.
All right, any old business that anybody wishes to discuss? Any additional business? Means adjourned.